Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Rafia Zakaria is an author, attorney, and human rights activist who has worked on behalf of victims of domestic violence around the world. She writes for the New York Times, Al Jazeera English, Dissent. Rafia was born and raised in Karachi, Pakistan, and now lives in the United States, where she serves on the board of directors of Amnesty International. Her new book is The Upstairs Wife, An Intimate History of Pakistan, where she tells the parallel stories of her family and her country, exploring the complicated aftermath of Pakistan's shift toward a more conservative culture. Again, the title of the book is The Upstairs Wife, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Rafia Zakaria to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's a great pleasure to have you on the program. This book is fascinating because it not only is a history of Pakistan, but it is also a very intimate and personal book about you and about your aunt. And tell us about what it was, really going back to 1986 with Aunt Amina, who ultimately started the story for you.
Well, the motivating factor was that I grew up feeling this sense of injustice because of what happened to my aunt. And, you know, if I was to trace it down to a moment, it was in the 1980s when she came home and had discovered that because she couldn't have children, her husband was going to take another wife. And that became the central sort of family drama that defined in many ways how our family was perceived in the community, and then also our own relationship with Karachi and with Pakistan. So I started with that thread, you know, because I wanted to connect that, of course, to the larger story of Pakistan. You know, I think that in a sense, what happened after that, my aunt became the first wife of two wives, and hence the name of the book, and her husband would divide his time equally between her and his other wife. And I definitely saw parallels between that and the story of Pakistan itself, which, if you've studied South Asian history, perhaps you know, is the subcontinent was divided into two countries in 1947 by the British, and that precipitated the events of partition. So I wanted to bring those personal and political narratives together to explore kind of, I mean, you know, I think most Americans see Pakistan today, and they have very little idea of the path that has led Pakistan to its current position. So I wanted to kind of take people through the journey of Pakistan, through my family's journey, so they would understand perhaps what it's like to be Pakistani at this moment.
What is fascinating, again, about this story is that your aunt becomes the upstairs wife, if you will. And during this time, there was a campaign to legitimize the rule of a military dictator. And it had profound effects on, well, the citizens as a whole, but especially women. And this was going on at the same time.
Yes, that's exactly the thing. Because one of the central questions that Pakistan then and to a great extent now is grappling with is that, well, if we asked for a separate country and got a separate country that was for the Muslims of the subcontinent, what being a Muslim country was going to mean. But how that question was answered, at least in the 80s when this was happening in late 80s, mid 80s, was by a military dictator who chose to say that this is what Islam is and this is what Pakistan is going to be. So the people of Pakistan, which include my family, my aunt, had very little say in what the laws of Pakistan would be and what women's roles in Pakistan would be. And so, you know, the story threads together my Aunt Amna's story with the story of a lot of other Pakistani women so that, you know, readers can get the emotional landscape of the country and get more than one story and see all the different ways in which people suffer through these laws and how political and historical events, even though they take place beyond the realm of the private world that women inhabit in Pakistan, affect intimate lives very deeply. I think, you know, most readers, especially the body of work on Pakistan right now, is dominated by issues of terrorism and strategy and Al-Qaeda and Taliban and ISIS and how we're going to defeat all of these forces. And the question very much is, you know, the framing of Pakistan is very much the enemy. So I wanted to take readers into the private realm of Pakistan, of families, of people who love each other in complicated ways and who are trying to navigate that, along with tremendous amounts of conflict that's taking place around them, so that, you know, people can see that we're not just the backdrop for movies like Zero Dark Thirty and American Sniper. We're a country with a lot of complexities and with a lot of people whose lives are basically in the balance because of what's happening.
The Upstairs Wife is the name of the new book, An Intimate History of Pakistan. Rafia Zakaria is our guest. Let's talk a little bit about the contradictions here, because, as you note in the book, the Quran permitted a man to marry a second wife, but it was rarely done, and the act brought shame and indignity to the family's social structure. And yet there was this, as you point out in the book, this incredible misogynist oppression that was happening with women. So talk a little bit about that contradiction.
Well, the rule in the Quran is that you can take more than one wife if you're able to do, quote, perfect justice between them. And the reason why I go into the detail that I do in the book in showing how this uncle of mine divided his life and his home and all the rest of it is to show that perfect justice is never possible, especially not in emotional lives and in intimate relationships. And, you know, as a lawyer, I've worked a lot on issues dealing with Islamic law and polygamy and et cetera. And there are definitely legal and rational arguments to be made as well. But I wanted to make an argument that shows just the emotional toll of a rule like that. And the desire to do that was just to get readers to think about, you know, we take a lot of rules for granted. We also take a lot of historical solutions for granted. For example, I mean, you know, partition was similarly a great idea in terms of, oh, let's divide up this country and the Muslims can go here and then the Hindus can go there and it'll work just fine. It's the same in a sense with polygamy, because it's the idea, okay, well, if you give two women identical floors in the house and just, you know, divide your time absolutely equally, then that equals perfect justice. Of course, the reality of Pakistan and the reality of the marriage that my aunt faced both showed that that's completely impossible, that you do have rules, but then the enactment of those rules sometimes is not possible. And in that sense, whether or not you agree or disagree with a rule has to be tempered with this idea of the emotional ruthlessness it involves, or just the pain that you're going to inflict on someone. I think the problem with a lot of Muslim countries, Pakistan especially, because we're not an Arab country, we don't, you know, we are Muslim, but we read the Quran in translation, is that, you know, especially after the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, the aspects of Islam that seem most different from the West are being given priority and really being highlighted as the most authentic aspects of the religion. Polygamy and the popularity of polygamy is definitely part of that, because it's a marital arrangement that very visibly differs from what exists in the West and also what normally existed in Pakistan for decades. So this is a resurgent issue. It's, you know, as I wrote, at the time this was happening, polygamy was very, very rare in Pakistan. Nobody had ever really, at least within our community, had really encountered it before or knew how to react to it. Of course, you know, several decades later, it's now far, far more common in Pakistan because, like I said, we're living at a time when anything that visibly differs from the West is automatically considered more Islamic than what Islam has in common with the West. And it's a difficult moment to live through. And that's why, you know, I think that bringing this aspect of it to the fore and showing how many, many people, many forces, you know, not just culture and religion of Pakistan, but the West itself is complicit in the Pakistan that exists today.
What is really interesting is how you take your own story and actually mirror it in some ways and entwine it with that of Benazir Bhutto, who was the first and only female prime minister, who was assassinated in 2007, but the rise and fall was happening at this time.
Yes, I mean, growing up in Karachi, in Pakistan myself, she was also from Karachi, I was definitely very, very influenced by both her rise, watching her be in these political rallies that were just full of men, very, very few women, and persevering, and then ultimately becoming prime minister. So, you know, in many ways, her life and the struggles that she faced, she went to prison, she was put in exile, she came back, she went back. I mean, there were a lot of cycles in her life, are very much a part of Pakistan's story. But of course, as you know, the book begins at her assassination, and it's because at that time I was forced to confront the question, and I want readers to confront the question of whether this was a time when women are going to be erased from Pakistan's story. So writing this book at this time was, you know, my own personal way of dealing with this fear that the future for Pakistan, particularly Pakistani women, is going to be even more difficult and challenging than the past. And, you know, as a columnist, I'm a columnist for Dawn, which is Pakistan's largest English newspaper. I only have my words, whereas, you know, groups like the Taliban who are directly now, I mean, Karachi, one-third of Karachi is controlled by different factions of the Taliban. So this was my form of rebellion against them and against the fact that they want a different story for Pakistan, a different history for Pakistan, and a different present for Pakistan in which women are erased or shut back into the private sphere and have no sort of political control.
You talked a moment ago about the cycles, but this is very much a cyclical history, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I think all histories are, in a sense, cyclical.
True.
And all countries and all individuals really are constantly, I think, balancing this idea of what has happened before and how their present is defined by it. And the fact is that none of us can go back to where we have been at different points in our life, or the same way that countries can't go back to other points in their history. So the effects of partition reverberate today in Pakistan, but we can't go back to that point. We can't do it over again. It's the same thing with marriage. You can't go back to a point in your relationship when things were better. So all of us have to live with our present and contend with its reality and decide whether or not we can love it. And that's really the central question of the book, is can you love something for what it is instead of the promise that it represents? I mean, for a long time, Pakistan was an idea and it was a promise, but it's a reality now, and it's a reality whose flaws are very visible to both Pakistanis and you know, the rest of the world. And the question becomes, how do we reconcile with that?
So, Rafia, when you read the book, you read about these heroines and you hope, that you want this glimmer of hope for the future. And that glimmer of hope really doesn't come. And I'm curious as to whether you feel any hope.
Well, I think the point for me as a writer, instead of sort of giving exactly the determinants of the path forward, was to present a mirror of what exists today. And so the effort was to show where we are now and give readers a reflection of Pakistan. And I wanted to do it in women's voices. I think that there is a tendency, you know, in the search for hope sometimes to only prioritize or give importance to narratives in which there is some dramatic, you know, overcoming or a happy ending. And the fact is that neither life nor countries are really like that. And those happy endings in a lot of ways are artificial. And so, you know, in writing the book, I wanted to reclaim Pakistani history for women and create essentially a narrative where this country's story, my country's story, would be defined by women and the way they saw different historical events happen. To me, that is in itself a victory, because that's not something that is very common or often done. Pakistani women don't get to speak for themselves. And it's not just Pakistani culture or tradition that is the culprit for that. It's also the West, because, you know, our narratives have been appropriated all the time into the wars that the U.S. wants to fight or NATO wants to fight. So in that sense, hope exists in the fact that just getting our voices out there is a tremendously difficult task. And the hope is that once those voices are out, they will automatically generate change.
Rafia Zakaria is our guest. The name of the book, The Upstairs Wife, An Intimate History of Pakistan.
Do you think more voices are getting out?
Right now, I would say no. I think it's a very frustrating time, because even when they do get out, it's only, I guess the most prominent example right now is the story of Malala Yousafzai, who was shot by the Taliban. And I have tremendous respect for her courage. But that is also kind of, shows the American tendency to reduce Pakistan to sort of just, you know, schoolgirls running away from the Taliban. Pakistani women are not all schoolgirls running away from the Taliban. We have the same sort of complexity in our struggles for empowerment that American women have. And it is reductionist and somewhat condescending to reduce us to that. So the hope is, of course, that the people who read this book will see the complexity of the story, and that they'll understand that just like you can't solve all of America's problems by just making the schools better or whatever, you can't solve all of Pakistan's problems in the same way. You know, there are complex issues, and some of those are global issues, not exclusive to Pakistan.
And this is a very Western response to what you just said, but I have to say that I look at our country and really as the world as a whole sometimes, and you talk about the complexity of this, and it doesn't seem to me that there's a full understanding, really, by this country and others of the problem, much less what to do about it.
Well, but that's precisely, that's actually a great question, because that is what I'm trying to say with this book, is Pakistan is not a problem for the U.S. to solve. It's a country. It's a country with a particular history and a particular complexity. And we don't just exist to fulfill, you know, the bad guy role in American movies and be the terrorist boogeyman that's going to come get you. We're not that. And it's very, very frustrating, disturbing, and really heartbreaking as a Pakistani to continue to see the same repetition of that stereotype in so many iterations, whether it's movies or television shows or whatever. I can tell you that if you read this book, or whoever reads this book, will understand Pakistan in a way that's completely different, and in a way that kind of connects with universal emotions. The feelings that we have before we get married, or the feelings that we have when we have issues with our family members. The reason for that is that I'm trying to show, and the reason why I take the family metaphor is because our family members, they're not perfect, and often they cause us pain, and it's a complex relationship. But we still, you know, we still endure it, and we still give it value in our lives, and it enriches our life. And so Pakistan is the same way. It's not a problem for the U.S. to solve. And, you know, it doesn't exist in this moment in history. It has a particular trajectory, and many of its episodes involve U.S. complicity. But, you know, you have to break out of that story. As a Pakistani, I mean, the biggest thing that I could do for my country, especially because I've written this for, and it's being published in the United States, is to try and humanize Pakistan so that they can see. I mean, if you read this book and you see my aunt's story, I don't think you will ask, you know, okay, is she responsible for terrorism? Right. It's going to seem a ludicrous question. But that's, you know, that is the question that most Pakistanis face today. And you know, and that's why I think it's important for them to engage with this aspect of Pakistan.
Well, the story is so well told and so memorable and important. The name of the book is The Upstairs Wife, An Intimate History of Pakistan. It is published by Beacon Press. Rafia Zakaria, thank you so much for spending time and sharing your story with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me on.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book, The Upstairs Wife, An Intimate History of Pakistan. It is published by Beacon Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.